talk station of the Crescent City. WBOK, 1230 AM.
The following program is a paid program that doesn't necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff, management, and advertisers of WBOK.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need two pairs of shoes when I get through walking these blues. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand. Now ain't that a shame? I'm leaving here today. Yes, I'm going back home to stay. Yes, I'm walking to New Orleans. You used to be my honey. Till I
so
lost all my money.
New Orleans today, visiting with residents from
no
parts
use
of town
for me to cry.
To bring their neighborhoods back.
I'll see you by and by.
Warehouse District and Vera Tripp came back as fast as she could in Gentilly and set about helping others feel the same. This is your Crosstown Conversations host, Gene Nathan. And we always try to share some of the fun times in town with you, too, so we'll also be talking about the big hot weekend in New Orleans. Well, we knew it'd be hot, but in addition, it is the weekend of White Linen Night and Satchel Summerfest weekend, too, so we'll hear a little bit about those. And our phone lines will be open to hear from the city's greatest dancers. We're looking for the best dancers with the best moves. And we want to help those who used to know how to get down on the dance floor do it again. So the phone number is 260-9265. You can call in and tell us who the best dancers are. And, you know, you can tell us about the first ones, too, if you want. Anyway, let's get started. And I want to introduce Vera Triplett, who Vera is one of the great discoveries in my life as we got working on the planning for the city, because a more level-headed, even-handed person I really don't know, and it was just a pleasure to work with her. But I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, Vera, who you are, and then let's talk about those first days as you came back. And I want to know how you got your house so spiffy so fast. I'll never forget when we started our planning and we came to your home and it was just so beautifully redone already in the middle of Gentilly, which was really quite a mess. And, you know, we heard a lot about the Ninth Ward. We heard a lot about Lakeview. We didn't hear as much about Gentilly, and Gentilly took a hit.
Right.
So.
Well, just a little bit about me. For a living, what I do is I work as the Chief Operations Officer for the Charter Schools Network, the Capital One University of New Orleans Charter Schools Network. And we have actually three schools in the Gentilly area and one school sort of mid-city area that we run. And in, just in terms of being back in Gentilly and getting back into my home as quickly as I did, I think that for me, like for a lot of people, I really just didn't have much of a choice. My husband had a job here. We were in Texas, where most everybody was evacuated to. According, my daughter says that's where everybody goes. Everybody goes to Texas. And so we were in Texas, and my husband's job said to him, you know, we need you back here in New Orleans. And my husband said, I'm not going to go. We're either all going to stay in Texas or we're all going to go home. And so we're not going to be separated as a family. And so we decided that we were going to come home, and we wanted to start working on our house right away. We loved our neighborhood. We had lived in Gentilly at that point nearly 10 years.
What's your neighborhood?
My neighborhood is Milneyburg,
The
Milneyburg neighborhood in Gentilly. And Gentilly has 26 distinct neighborhoods and neighborhood associations.
That's really something.
So a lot of people don't realize
that. In a lot of ways, it's now being characterized in the new zoning process as a suburban neighborhood. And I don't think most people think of it as suburban because it's so close into town.
Right, right.
But it did develop after the war as a suburban neighborhood. So you have all these little subdivisions.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. We do. And historically, the neighborhoods came about as a result of a variety of different things. Milneyburg actually used to be a resort town. And people would come and stay in this, much like you would go to watercolor or whatever.
No kidding.
People would come and stay there, and there were amusements, and there were rides and different little shops and restaurants for people to go to. And when I was growing up, I actually grew up in Treme. I grew up in the Seventh Ward, but we would actually come to Gentilly to go to restaurants, and there used to be either a Maison Blanche or a D.H. Holmes right at the corner of Gentilly and Elysian Fields that we used to go. So Gentilly
shopping
was the place to be before before the East began to develop.
Right, right. So what how did you do it though? I just, you know, literally you walk into your house, what was the condition of it?
Well, my house had about 12 feet of water. Water was past the roof line. It was pretty high. It was destroyed. And there wasn't a single thing. I remember coming, and I tell this story all the time. We were leaving to come home to check on the house, and I had gone to Walmart and bought this clear plastic square bin. And my mom said to me, what are you doing with that? And I said, I'm going to bring back all of the stuff that I salvage in this. And she just kind of gave me a look like, I don't know about that. And, you know, I came to New Orleans with that bin empty, and I went back to Texas with it empty because there was not a single salvageable thing in my home. So it was destroyed. My neighborhood was pretty much destroyed. But we, you know, we worked hard, my husband and I, and we acted as our own contractors, which we never had a job that we were more unqualified for, which is part of the reason why there's a doorknob on my front door that you have to go up with instead of down with. But we did a lot of stuff ourselves. But, I mean, I think that's what it was. It was a combination of just the sheer force of will on our part and help from a lot of people, including friends and neighbors, and, of course, hired help. But we wanted to come home. I think it was a desire to do that, and so we just made it happen.
What makes Milneyburg so special for you and your neighbors that despite water to the rafters that you had to be back there?
You know, I think that the thing about the Gentilly neighborhoods, all of them, and Milneyburg as well, is Gentilly has been, for the most part, for many years, what everyone wants now. It's always been that mixed income, mixed race, mixed lifestyle neighborhood. Everybody's sort of looking for that, and that's what we've always had. You know, we've had homeowners and renters mixing together. We've had people who, you know, have jobs that are six-figure income jobs, and people who are, you know, working-class folk that are hourly wage employees, older people, young people, black people, white people, Hispanic people. We've just always had that mixture, and despite, you know, the stories that I guess you hear about New Orleans, about there being such disharmony racially, Gentilly has, for the most part, been a community that's always been racially mixed, where people have lived in pretty much perfect harmony. I mean, and I hate to make it sound like a Norman Rockwell painting, but it's really the truth.
Well, and at the first meeting that I did attend at your home when I was working on the United New Orleans plan, that's exactly what I found. It was a room filled with all kinds of income levels, colors, professional background, not professional background, the whole gamut. And I was actually impressed that everybody was out for a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, of course, throughout this entire process, it's just literally shocking how many people, despite what was going on in their personal lives with their homes and their businesses, actually got out to those planning meetings.
Absolutely.
But let me turn for a second to Peter Trappelin, who is with us also. He's an architect, and he works and lives both in the Warehouse District. And, you know, I think the myth is that the Warehouse District was in the sliver by the river, so you were okay, you're cool, you got home, nothing, no problem, right? No.
Well, I mean, that's to some degree true. The Warehouse District didn't flood. Waters came pretty close to it, but there wasn't any real flooding in the area where I was. It was more, I guess, on the other side of Poydras. Some of the larger central business district buildings had flooding in their basements and such, and they were shut down completely. There was no power, no elevator service, because all of their mechanical and electrical systems were located down in the basement. And
wasn't
all
that brilliant?
All of those basements flooded. So, I mean, there's still buildings today that are still shut down because the cost of restoring those mechanical and electrical systems is so great, and the tenants all left. So, you know, it's and some of the buildings have actually changed hands while people speculated on New Orleans as an investment.
I've got to stop you right here and just ask you. I've never understood this. How could we, the professions that did that, what were they thinking in putting all of that equipment underground in a city that is pretty much, for the most part, below sea level?
Yeah, I
really need to understand this.
It's certainly not allowed any longer, but I think you know, a lot of these buildings were built in the 20s.
After the levees were built.
Yeah, after the levees were built, the ground were higher. We didn't experience the type of storms, I think, that we experience today. The marshes were still all intact. We, you know, so I think storms that did hit didn't hit with the fury that they hit today. And really, we didn't have any of these type of flood events, you know, from the 20s to the most recent one. So, you know.
So, but then there's the assumption that, in the sliver by the river where you didn't have damage, that you weren't affected by it. But I know from living on Esplanade Ridge, which did not flood, you could not be in the city of New Orleans after the storm and not and not be affected.
No, I mean, everybody was affected. I mean, I had employees that lost their homes, lost their apartments. You know, people were scattered. Some of my employees decided not to come back. You know, our workload virtually stopped. So I had to go borrow considerable sums of money just to keep my business afloat at the time. I didn't have that much physical damage, luckily, to any of my property, to my office or to my house. I had some trees down, some broken windows, a little bit of roof damage. I was pretty fortunate. Like everybody else, I had the ordeal of dealing with the refrigerator after the storm, which was pretty disastrous.
But at least it was one of our favorite sources of humor by the time it was all over. It was one of the funnier parts of tragic in a way, but funny also at the same time. I mean, there was nothing funny about when you first walked in your house.
No, and I did quite a few
that
houses.
That smell, is you can never forget that smell.
Yeah, I came in after the storm and went from house to house, you know, families, and because I came in very early, just
taping them up and putting them out.
Putting it, yes. Mm-hmm.
What was your role? What did you take on as your part of trying to help the city back?
Well, initially, I mean, the first thing I did, I knew that it was going to be a major rebuilding effort, and I wanted to be involved. So I made sure that I was involved in the Bring New Orleans Back Commission. Which I think really, I mean, it was a tremendous volunteer effort. People put in, you know, thousands of people put in thousands of man hours putting that together. And I think it's really unfortunate that it was just shelved because I really think there were some great ideas that came out of it. I think it was very misunderstood. I don't think people read it. I still read articles in the Times-Picayune today that talk about, you know, the green dots as if that was to obliterate a neighborhood, when if you read the Bring New Orleans Back report, it's about creating parks in every neighborhood. That's what that whole idea was that every neighborhood would try to create a park within the neighborhoods. So where it came about that it was destroying neighborhoods, I still don't know. But
yeah, we talked about that at our last show quite a bit. I think that was part of a kind of a fear. Mm-hmm. I think everybody was very insecure and fearful about what was going to happen to their neighborhood. And there were people who did say things about who they would prefer to come back or not, and that filtered through the city and got attached to that plan. And I think that's what happened. But, you know, Peter, the truth of the matter is a lot of the elements of that plan, as you know and as Vera knows, were worked into the United New Orleans plan, and then they were worked into the master plan. So, and then gradually, as people began to better understand the whole idea of sustainable development, I think that kind of came around,
right?
And that's a question.
And I think I think one of the best things that's come out of the storm was the fact that so many people participated in the Unified New Orleans plan, never before have we ever seen that many people involved in a planning exercise. I think so many people really learned what planning is, how important it is to a neighborhood, and I think the city as a whole, just as an educational experience about planning, the city's benefiting from that.
And I have to tell you that at the end of the planning, and Vera knows this, we were all very concerned about, would all of this engagement be endorsed? Would it be recognized? Would it continue? And in some ways, it was not, as we went through certain issues having to do with the public housing and the hospitals and so on. But I have to just do a little kudo for a minute here to our Mitch Landrieu, who is doing these community meetings to get community input on the budget.
Yes.
In all my 35 years in New Orleans, I have never, ever heard of neighborhoods and communities being invited to the table to talk about their priorities for the city's budget. Somebody call in and correct me, but I don't remember any time that was done. So that's a kind of impressive sign of how we may go forward and actually keep the citizen engagement going. But during UNOP and during the master plan, Vera, you continued to be really involved, and it was contentious, wasn't it, at times? And I mean, there were all these little spats between neighborhoods, between planners, and you had to kind of keep an even keel there. There's a kind of whole inside story there, and you were on the advisory committee for UNOP,
right?
And so how did you manage to keep your cool and help others that were out there? You know, and it was all about passion. It was all about wanting to make things happen, and yet there were some head knocking.
Well, you know, I think that I was the chair of the community support organization for UNOP, and you know, I think in terms of just keeping your cool, I drank a lot during the day. No, I'm joking. But I think that for me, it really became, you know, more about understanding that this was just such a it was a tumultuous time. It was, I think, for everybody. And, you know, I heard Peter mention, you know, while he didn't have the water, he certainly, everybody in the city, no matter what, if you were a New Orleanian during that time, you could have been high and dry and you were still affected by what happened. I mean, it was just a way of life change for everybody, regardless of how much you were physically impacted. And I think psychologically, people were just in a really sort of obscure place. And it was sort of, you know, wanting to be fully present and engaged in a rebuilding of the city, but also not having had the opportunity to really mourn all of the losses that we've had. And so, and some people still haven't. I mean, some people still, they've been, you know, working on the work of rebuilding the city for so long, they haven't had time to sort of sit back and take stock of how this whole thing impacted them as individuals. And so I sort of understood that on another level. And, I understood that people needed to vent, and I understood that people needed to complain, and I also understood that people needed to fight a little bit. I mean, that's just the way that it works. You don't really ever get anything done unless those things happen. But I think ultimately what we were able to do is help people to feel like they were involved and to feel like their voices were being heard. And I think for a lot of them, just the ability to be able to come. I mean, how many times had you gotten a chance prior to Katrina to come up to a microphone and speak to a group of people that were representing the city and have a audience of people from all over the city? And anybody could do it and say how they felt about what was going on. And so it was therapeutic in and of itself. And so it didn't really bother me. It didn't, it didn't cause me to be uncomfortable, I guess.
Actually, I think more than just being able to vent, I think to me what I saw happen is that before the storm, people had a tendency to deal with what they did not want to happen in their neighborhoods. And I know all of us that were involved in the planning kept saying, let's talk about what you do want to happen.
Right.
And people had to start thinking about, oh, okay, wait a minute. Oh, what do I want?
Right.
And that was a very, very big paradigm shift in how you think about the city. So where has that put us? A lot of reporters are coming into town now for the anniversary. Mm-hmm. These interviews we're doing are sort of part of us telling that story. And they're asking, okay, how has New Orleans changed? What's new? What's new on the horizon? What has been accomplished? And they want to see it. Do they want to put their hands on it too? So, what do you think is how would you characterize New Orleans today as compared with before the storm? Mm-hmm. And then I want you to tell me, what are you committed to in the future? What do you want to see happen? Peter, you want to start?
Well, what's changed? I think one of the things is citizen involvement has changed. I think we see that across the board. And I think there's a much greater demand for ethics in government. And I think we have probably, I think, one of the best city councils that in my lifetime that I can think of. And I think people are demanding that. So I think from, a government side, I think we're sort of demanding accountability. I think the planning exercise, I think, has been great. I think that having a master plan, as you said, where people can talk about what we dream of what this city can be and put it on paper and try to, realize that we have the opportunity to shape our city as to what it will be. In terms of rebuilding, I mean, we have a long way still to go. There are projects that are still held up in the city. There was a lot of, I think, mismanagement early on that was unfortunate. I don't really blame anybody for that. I think that it's a difficult thing. Nobody, you have a catastrophe and everybody thinks there's a different set of rules. I think a lot of the city employees were misled, by advisors. Somehow the thing ended up to be a mess. But some of the rebuilding that's happened has been a lot of housing, and I think there's probably better affordable options now in terms of some of the complexes that have been built. In terms of new construction, that's most of what has happened has been recovery projects. Schools. My goodness, we may end up with the best schools in the entire country.
I went to the opening of Landry yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was blown away. I said, oh, my God, it's Lincoln Center on the West Bank. It was mm-hmm. so magnificent. And, I've been one of the people really advocating for restoring the older schools, and I still am.
Right.
But when I saw that school, I kind of finally got what Vallis and Pastorek mm-hmm. and
We're designing Carver
about.
High School.
Okay.
And I can tell you, it's gonna be a beauty. And
really?
And green, yes, they're all LEED silver.
That's great.
And it's gonna be. I think it's gonna be a real, really great high school.
And mm-hmm. as so many of the speakers yesterday were just totally amazing, and they were all saying, our kids deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the theme. And
yes.
Pastorek was talking about how there was some criticism. It's too big. It's too expensive. And they were saying, too big and too expensive for what?
Right.
For our kids?
Right.
This is, I think, going to have just an enormous impact on how our kids think about their future.
Yes, I think so, too. And I mean, we can't bring the city up without educating our youth. And if we don't, education is the key to improving this city.
We're
you
want to
reduce crime, educate.
Right. We're going to be talking in just a moment with Woody Koppel from the Orleans Parish School Board. But Vera, what would you, what's your wish list for Gentilly right now and for the city? What hasn't happened yet? What's there to happen that you would like to see in the future?
Well, I think what hasn't happened yet, and some of it has happened. I just don't think it has happened at the scale that we would like it to. But I think economic development, quality retail for the Gentilly community. We have neighborhoods in Gentilly that can support a variety of different industries, and so we're looking for that. And we talked earlier about the history of Gentilly. Gentilly at one time had a movie theater in it. It had a whole slew of things for your kids to do on the weekends. So there are all sorts of things that we like. Infrastructure, streets, We still have probably some of the worst streets in the city of New Orleans. I know that there are going to be people that are going to call in and say, absolutely not, my neighborhood wins that. But I can tell you that we can absolutely have a battle about whether or not Gentilly has some of the worst streets in the city of New Orleans. And so those are some of the things. We just had the announcement that Captain Elder, who's been third district captain and for the police department in our neighborhood for many, many years, is retiring. He's been a great advocate for us. And so one of the things that we want to do is be a part of the decision-making process for the next captain that comes in, because crime and safety, you know, one of the things that Peter mentioned, it's very important to us. Gentilly has enjoyed a pretty low crime rate in all of its neighborhoods for the most part for many, many years. I mean, we've had some things happen, but for the most part, we haven't been one of the neighborhoods that's had some of the more violent crime happening in it. However, we want to make sure that we continue with that trend, and we also want to help in the selection of this next person that's going to come in and lead the police force.
Do you think the new administration, both in city government and in the mayor's office and in the council and in other layers of government, do you think they truly understand how we perceive citizens should continue to be involved?
You know, it's hard to say. I think that there are people who want to understand. And I think that there are people who've been in the struggle, and perhaps they do understand. Here's the thing that's so great about where we are in New Orleans right now, though. It doesn't matter whether they get it or not. We get it. The citizens are so engaged, and it's really not about now what the politicians want. It really becomes about what we want. And I think finally people have realized that when we elect people to represent us, they are supposed to represent us, not their own interests. Not what they want, but what we want. And so I think the community gets that now. So it doesn't matter whether or not they get it. We get it. And we're going to make sure that we get what we want.
Well, that sounds great. So can I count on both of you to keep going?
Oh, absolutely.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for coming and being with us. And I'll be checking in on you. And keep us abreast. Let us know any developments. Just shoot me an email, and we'll any announcements you need to make about things that you have coming up. We'd like to make sure people know about it. Anything you want to say as a parting shot?
I just like to thank you for doing this. I don't know that Peter and I would have ever met one another or been in the same room together were it not for you putting together these crosstown conversations. So this is just a great idea on your part. Thank you.
Ah, chills on my back. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks.
We're going to go rotate around here and talk with someone who I have a very old and personal link with, and he may not even remember, because he was probably about 2 or 3 years old, right?
Right.
We're talking now 1972.
So I'd be 3 years old.
This is when I arrived in New Orleans. My husband had been working on the Gulf Coast, Bob Tannen, and he got hooked up to help decide where a new bridge over the Mississippi River was going to go, and to make it happen, which he did, in fact. And we were looking for a place to live. I looked all over the city, and there was something about Esplanade Avenue that just drew me in. And the corner of Treme and Esplanade, there was a pink townhouse. I think it was pink then. It's been pink all along, yeah, for some reason. Balcony, two-story townhouse. And the rent was good. It had these great big windows. I came out of an apartment in New York, and we did not have great big windows and a porch all the way around the building. And I said, this is it. And your dad owned the building and rented it to us.
Well, I remember, and I actually remember stepping on a nail as a little kid when my dad was working there. So, yeah, I remember it fondly.
Well, I still to this day can't pass it without kind of, you know, having a little meditative moment about my times there, especially about my Catahoula hound that used to walk around the balcony and sprinkle the folks below on the bus stop. We had to kind of think about an alternative place to deal with having dogs, which we liked doing. But you and I talked this past week because I was very concerned about the sale of these school buildings. I kept looking at them as an opportunity for community uses, and I figured with an auction, the lowest bidders were going to be able to grab them up. The mayor obviously shared some concern about it, and I know that you guys were not looking to do something that was not to the advantage of the city, but maybe share with us just a little bit of the perspective of what we're dealing with these older schools that really do have a lot of potential, and what are you guys thinking about in terms of how to best move them into use?
Well, if I can, let me kind of expand the concept and back up a little bit. You know, it wasn't just school buildings. There's a